Oh, hi there. This is M.P. Fitzgerald, author of A Happy Bureaucracy, and I'm pretending to play the jazz piano.
No one is holding a gun to my head to say this, but they are withholding the antidote. Funding for this podcast comes from ebook and paperback sales of A Happy Bureaucracy, the book. Send a warning to you straight-laced and prudish books on your bookcase by adding paperback copies of A Happy Bureaucracy, Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland, and post-apocalyptic pirates. Just head over to my website, mpfitzgerald.art. Once more, that's mpfitzgerald.art. Okay.
Just please spare my family. Please spare my family.
Fear and Loathing in the Wasteland. The Happy Bureaucracy, Book 2, by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are even more gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Also, child endangerment. Did I mention child endangerment? Chapter 6. The man came out of nowhere, and it was not until he was right behind Arthur that anybody had noticed him. To give the man credit, he was trained that way. Dealing out death was his profession, and sneaking up on somebody was nearly an essential skill. Arthur was not even the first to know that he was there. The wounded man saw him first and jumped in place from the sudden startling image he saw. Arthur turned around with dumb fright. Clad in mostly leather and carrying a shotgun was a man shorter than Arthur with an IRS badge that read, Enforcer, the single enforcer assigned to the mission. Arthur let out a sigh of relief, which is not something he would have done if Rabia were around to warn him of his impending assassination. The enforcer kept his shotgun lowered.
Thank God. I thought we lost you. It is good to see an enforcer out here, Arthur said, looking the enforcer up and down. Even a, creepy one.
The short enforcer looked up at Arthur with hurt eyes.
Creepy, he said. Yeah, well, you did just sneak up on me from behind, said nothing, and waited until someone noticed you. That's creepy.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. It's a force of habit, really, after having to kill so many people. Sorry.
Arthur considered this easy to hand wave. Plenty of the enforcers he had worked with just lacked the normal office etiquette of the auditors. It was nearly an area of contention in the IRS, as trying to build a single work culture between the two was nearly impossible. The auditors joked about enforcers not making good impressions at the bunker's Christmas parties. The enforcers joked about the auditors choking on their own blood when they died. It was a very divided workplace, to say the least.
How many of us are there left? The enforcer asked.
A baker's dozen, Arthur replied. Were you in the firefight?
The enforcer looked at Arthur's IRS badge.
You're Arthur McDowell?
Arthur nodded, as the enforcer then looked around at the other agents.
Mind if we, talk privately?
The enforcer asked, as he finished scanning the faces of the desperate-looking pencil pushers. Arthur agreed with hesitation, then followed the short man a distance away from the others. Walking away from the pack felt ominous, yet satisfying at the same time. Satisfying because they were walking away from Slaver City, and even the short distance was cathartic. But no one wanted to talk in private if there was something good to say. After they had walked a distance that the enforcer seemed comfortable with, he turned to Arthur.
Have you seen Ralph? He asked.
There were a few answers to that question that popped into Arthur's head. Who cares? And why do you want to know about that asshole? Were, of course, at the very top. Arthur instead settled on, what? Which helped move the conversation in no direction and was ultimately unproductive.
Ralph, have you seen my cousin Ralph? I heard he was working with you, the enforcer asked urgently.
Yeah, Arthur replied as he clicked his pen. Ralph left us behind.
The enforcer exhaled audibly, and his composure lightened.
Was he in that other van? I lost him in the confusion.
Arthur said yes, and the enforcer relaxed even more.
Thank God. I'm his cousin, and his enforcer, Richard Siemens.
Of course your name is Richard, Arthur thought.
Well, our fearless leader went on without us, with his tail between his legs.
The air between the two men was suddenly burdensome with awkwardness. The enforcer did not meet Arthur's eyes, nor did he seem surprised by Arthur's sentiment. After nothing was said in reply, Arthur continued on.
You never answer my question. Were you in the firefight?
He said, taking a step closer to Richard. Richard took a step back, then looked Arthur in the eyes.
I stayed in the van because, technically, I was not assigned to this mission. Boyd did not send me.
His gaze left Arthur's. Please, don't let anybody know. That's desertion.
Great, Arthur thought. Now I'm keeping secrets for Ralph and his cousin.
Still, the fact that reinforcements were on their way was assuring. Safety aside, it also meant that Arthur did not have to file another 1199B.
Arthur hated filing twice when he got the first one perfect.
He did not immediately agree to the requested secrecy, and hiding his annoyance was not done well.
Is your whole family cheats and cowards, or is this a generational thing?
Richard looked hurt, guilty even.
He took a step back away from Arthur and looked down at the dead earth between them.
Look, I deserve that. I've been getting Ralph to cut corners with me for years. But please, never say something like that to Ralph. He looks up to you.
What?
What?
Said Arthur.
So we scavenged, Richard said defensively. It was safer than letting Ralph do his job. If he actually went out to someone's door and tried to audit, we would both die. I just wanted to keep him safe.
No, 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 said Arthur. Go back. What was that other thing?
He looks up to me?
Yeah, you didn't know? Arthur shook his head. As long as he had known Ralph, he had assumed that they both shared a relationship of mutual loathing glazed over by superficial niceties.
You're kind of my cousin's hero, Richard went on. So please, go easy on him.
Too late for that.
Before Arthur could interrogate Richard any further, they heard a commotion of excitement exhale from the others.
They're coming,
cheered the man with the wound as he handed a pair of binoculars over to another agent. Richard, his face already a pasty white, somehow grew whiter. Paying the enforcer no mind, Arthur ran back over to the rest of the IRS agents and was handed the binoculars. In the distance and under the mountain, he saw a great dust cloud on the road being expelled by a fleet of white minivans. The tax army was coming. For the first time in days, Arthur felt exhilaration, and he joined his fellow agents in their cheers. Well, all except for one. Richard sulked up to Arthur while he passed the binoculars back. Whispering, Richard said,
They can't know I'm here. Please, you have to hide me. You promised.
With that, Richard killed any excitement Arthur had felt for the reinforcements.
I did not,
Arthur said, probably louder than Richard would have liked. But the others were too busy trying to get a glimpse of their salvation and of the city's doom.
Please,
said Richard, his shoulders limp. Arthur sighed deep enough to properly convey his disdain. He was going to help him. There was no real doubt about that. Arthur's heart was just too easy to play. But if he was going to do it, he wanted to make sure that Richard knew that it was a pain in the ass. While the others' backs were turned and their attention squarely at the base of the mountain, Arthur led Richard into the tipped-over van. This is pretty much your only option, Arthur said, once Richard was inside. Not exactly sure why you needed help.
Arthur, Richard said in the dark of the van, I just wanted to keep my family safe.
The beams of light filtering through the van's bullet holes fell across Richard, landing on his face like spots. He looked sullen and desperate. Arthur did not see a cowardly enforcer clad in leather. he saw a vulnerable man dressed like someone's idea of a cheesy action hero. Arthur entered the van himself. I love my cousin, Richard said as Arthur took a tentative step closer. But he's an idiot. He truly believes in the IRS's efforts, and he wanted nothing more than to go door to door and slowly fix this shattered nation. Richard kept his eyes on the floor. I was relieved when I got assigned to him. I could watch over him and protect him. But he lowered his shotgun to the floor and held his hands out. Look at me. I'm no badass wasteland soldier. I grew up in the bunker just like you. I can't protect him. But the bloody idiot wanted to be a hero. He wanted to be like you. So I had to try. The gleeful cheers began to subside outside. I'm the coward, Arthur. I got Ralph to do the things you despise, and it kept him alive. Arthur had gone through enforcers like Rabia goes through cigarettes. The bunker would be much more crowded had Arthur just done what Richard and Ralph had done. Maybe he should not judge. All of the time when I asked Ralph to scavenge in the ruins of a bank or at an old mall I knew ahead of time was safe, Ralph would complain. He was always saying that you didn't do things that way and that he was not a real auditor. I think he hated himself for it. Richard's hands went to his face. When you miraculously came back from Slaver City with a giant book to audit and a war to start, that had been it. He wanted to be a hero too. There was no arguing with him. He was going to do it with or without me. Richard lowered his hands, revealing eyes that were now raw from tears, but none showed. I have to see that Ralph gets through this, Richard said, with steeled eyes yet shaky hands. Arthur sighed deeply. Stay in here until you hear the vans arrive, he said. I'm sure that there will be enough of a commotion that you can crawl out and pretend that you arrived with the tax army. I won't say anything. Thank you, Richard said, making eye contact for the first time since hiding in the van. After a moment of quiet understanding, Arthur exited the van. The other agents were no longer looking toward the mountain. All attention was on the city. What's happening? Arthur said. The agent that drove them there handed him back the binoculars. Arthur was not sure what he was looking at immediately. He swept the binoculars too high at first, missing the city completely. Then, when he tried to correct it, he swept too low and pointed them at the empty road. At the wall, the agent beside him said. Arthur corrected his scan. He was half afraid to see the mutant cars erupting exhaust as they thundered toward them. He was half expecting to see the slavers, all of them armed, marching toward their tipped-over van. All of this would have been better than what he saw. The slavers were chaining the slaves to the front of the walls. There was a policy that Arthur had always used to his advantage, and it was one that he had passed all of his hope on for the survival of the slaves he intended to free. In the new United Wastes economy, the IRS recognized that people could be assets. It did not discriminate between those assets as being alive or dead upon collection, and Arthur had always omitted that last part to citizens more than once. He let those that he was auditing believe that the people they kept had to be taken alive. It was what had saved Dinner from her dire circumstances, after all. The commissioner for Operation Support, Henry S. Boyd, would see no difference, dead or alive. They were all the same, and now the slavers were using their slaves as human shields. This could all be for naught. There was no time. The tax army was almost on its way. He had to get to Boyd. He had to stop the very army he mobilized from massacring innocent people. And seeing how much of a stickler for details the leader of that army was, there was no doubt that they would do it. The agents passed the time by passing the binoculars. Within minutes, they were overtaken by a motorcade of white vans. Only Arthur's mood stayed sullen. The others cheered as enforcer after enforcer exited the vans and stood in formation. Richard successfully crawled out with no notice and joined the formation. Only Arthur had seen him do it. Van after van pulled up around them, one bullet-ridden among them, Ralph's van. Ralph exited the van with a smile on his face and looked at Arthur with expectant eyes. Just an hour ago, Arthur would have read that face for gloat, but now knew it for what it really was. The hope of affirmation. Ralph jogged up to Arthur, delivered 1199B to Boyd myself, and bypassed the radio operator, said Ralph. He had not deserted them at all. He may have even made the best decision given the situation. Arthur faked a smile. Good job, Ralph, he said, now maybe a little too aware of what Richard had told him. Then, after letting Ralph have his moment, he spoke more urgently. We have to stop the advancement. Innocent people are in danger. Where is Boyd? Ralph blinked, but found his ground quickly. He's at the back. I'll show you, he said, and led the way. The tax army had filed out of the vans almost completely, and though they were outside, it had become very crowded. The other auditors were herded into a line between two lines of enforcers and were ordered to reload their weapons. Only Arthur and Ralph seemed to be going the opposite direction of everybody else, and for a moment it felt as if they were salmon swimming upstream. Those who were not in position were removing equipment from the vans, everything from radios to weapons. Although rifles had outnumbered clipboards, there was still an absurd amount of office supplies in the midst of a deadly army. More than once, Arthur had lost Ralph and had to push through a line of grizzled men clad in leather and gunmetal. Once they were past the waves of soldiers, they came across an open space on which was quickly being erected a medical tent. Arthur shuddered at the thought of being admitted there. The paperwork was always a headache. You had to sign for every dose of morphine you got, which naturally became harder to sign once you were on the stuff. Once they cleared the tent, they came across the control van. Boyd was seated at the top of it, under a newly erected deck umbrella. One hand held a giant thermos of coffee as the other held binoculars up to his eyes. At that height, Boyd could better see the battlefield, and at that distance be safe from its ravages. This was good for strategy, but Arthur could not shake the feeling that it was somehow cowardly. From Boyd's position, and with the high-powered binoculars that he carried, Arthur had no doubt that he would spot the slaves. The question was, would he care? As Arthur ran up to Boyd, following Ralph to a stop, he panted for breath. Before Arthur could say anything, Boyd looked down his binoculars, took a sip of coffee, and shouted, "March!" About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dust Mice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.